Hey everybody, it's Off The Ball, it's Gerard Gilroy. Now, before you dive into this podcast, there are plenty of ways to build an ACCA. Some people stick with the favourites, some are convinced they've cracked it, others less sure once the final result goes sideways. However you do it, William Hill lets you boost your football ACCA, giving you more back when it comes good. Just build the ACCA you want with four or more legs and William Hill will boost your winnings depending on the number of selections. The boost is applied automatically and shown right there in your bet slip, so you know exactly what you're getting. Whether it's a quiet midweek fixture or a big weekend of football, it's a simple way to get more out of every ACCA you place. Download the app or visit William Hill to get started today. It's over 18s only. Gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, back to the podcast.
Football on Off The Ball.
My fan head is running away with me. I have Arsenal winning the league, but the pundit had him, he says, that big blue machine that is just reading down Arsenal's neck.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off The Ball Daily.
Good evening, this is Tuesday night's Off The Ball. You're very welcome along. We are on your radios until 10 o'clock tonight. And coming up, we're going to be speaking to Tariq Panja of the New York Times from 7:30. The multi-club ownership model is very much back in the headlines. Liam Senior, as you heard there a moment ago in the news bulletin, has been appointed as Chelsea manager. This is all part of the Blue co-ownership group. He's come from Strasbourg. His former bosses in Strasbourg actually flew to London with him to ensure the deal was completed. And he's been inserted as Enzo Maresca's successor at Chelsea. The Strasbourg fans are up in arms, not just about losing Liam Senior, but about the way the club has been treated under Blue Co over the last little while. So Tariq is going to break that down for us from 7:30. From 8 o'clock, we're going to be checking in with Tommy Rooney, who is in situ at Clare Castle. He has braved the elements to go to a pre-season game between Clare and Kerry in the McGrath Cup. We believe the game is thrown in. We believe this game is not going to be decided by a coin toss. We do know as well that Tommy Rooney's been speaking to Andy Moore and Pádraig Joyce earlier today as well, so we'll be playing some of that audio and chatting to Tommy, particularly around the situation in Galway, where there's been some high-profile departures from the squad that have been confirmed by Joyce today. We're also going to be speaking that hour to Joe Rabbit, who is the Athenry Camogie manager. They had that amazing win over St Finbarr's in the All-Ireland Club Final replay at the weekend. So looking forward to catching up with him. And Owen Doyle will be on the football show from 9 o'clock to give us the inside scoop on Manchester United. He's with us in studio as well for the news round. Happy New Year, Owen.
And same to you, Paul.
You've been pouring over Manchester United content all day for us, so we'll go deep on that after 9 o'clock. I dare say United's going to be a big part of Cameron's news round as well today. Cameron Hill, a very good evening to you.
Good evening, Owen. Is it too late for a Happy New Year? It's January 6th.
You were on the radio on Saturday, you see, so
you've gone.
But
when do you stop saying it? Is it just the first time you see everyone in the new year until what?
Next Monday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm calling it now.
That's it now. Okay.
Calling it now. Yeah.
Got a hard rail there.
This weekend is fine. Next Monday, it's over.
Yeah, you're in the thick of 2026 by then, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have to start with some amazing news. I don't think we've actually ever had news of this level of joy ever to bring to the nation at 7 p.m. I am so, so excited to tell you all that Evan Ferguson has scored a goal. Have a listen to this.
Le ballon pour Ferguson. Ferguson! Climatiser le Via del Mare. Et la lampe amène à zéro. L'Irlandais, très bien joué ce mouvement la part des hommes du Gasp.
Yes, that is a French commentator. We couldn't quite find any Italian commentary out there. Maybe it's not live on Italian TV tonight, but Roma have beaten Lecce 2-0 away from home. Evan Ferguson with a 14th-minute strike. Describe it to us, Owen.
Yeah, lovely little play out wide, and he's on the edge of the box. And yeah, the ball comes into him. Lovely, lovely first touch, and he just swivels away from the defender and kind of buries it low and hard to the right of the goalkeeper. Not quite in the corner, but they had such power on it that the keeper didn't really have a chance. It was an excellent finish from him.
It was a Dybala assist as well, like the idea of Dybala assisting Evan Ferguson. Now, the bad news is that Artem Dovbyk scored the second goal, kind of public enemy number one here in Ireland.
Came on from him.
Absolutely.
After 60 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come with the Dovbyk. It just follows such a pattern. So Ferguson is now not going to score in the next game. He's going to get gaslit and verbally abused by Gasperini in a public setting. He is, because it's going to be January, get linked to a move back to Brighton. Brighton will say, no, we don't want this player. Then he's going to come back the next week, score in the next game. And Roma are like, what are you talking about? This guy's amazing. Yeah. Once again, we're getting gaslit by Gasperini, and we're going to think that, that Roma love him. And you rinse and repeat every second week. It's all glory or none at all for Evan Ferguson.
I'm starting to believe this is a translator issue. There's no way he keeps saying these negative things about him in the manner that he's saying them. Like that, this has to be lost in translation.
I don't know.
It seems very aggressive, though.
He really wants Joshua Zirkzee.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's no lost in translation about wanting Joshua Zirkzee as your number nine.
Not different in Italian, Zirkzee.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
I've had a theory on it in the sense of that potentially that he thinks the best way of getting the best out of Ferguson is to semi-abuse him in the media.
Yeah.
I've actually played for managers that have tried to do that with players. Never lasts long. But yeah, maybe. I don't know. It just seems really harsh to me. It seems really harsh, his language.
Consistently. And like, I mean, even last week, there was kind of talk of this being a failed loan spell. Like, it's not like he shot the lights out and has scored a goal a game or anything like that. But even if it ended now, you wouldn't call this a failed loan spell, would you? Like, he's picked up numerous Man of the Match awards.
I think he's 5 goals. Not the end of the world for a 20-year-old. Yeah, yeah.
Not great.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but it's not a failed loan spell.
Definitely not a failed loan spell. Going out there and different culture, different league, trying to learn the ropes of everything. He's coming good at a good time. I think did he score 2 weeks ago as well?
Yeah.
In
the middle, like the 28th, I think it was.
Yeah, like he's
in the middle of Christmas.
Only a month ago, Gazzetta were writing about the credits rolling on this. It's a sad end to this film. A once great player who was destined for stardom but couldn't quite make it. But I don't know. Even Gasperini, when he got the second goal against Genoa, was sort of like, I need more of that. Like, maybe I misjudged the lad, but it was still a kind of backhanded, where the hell was this?
Yeah. Very strange. It's just been, like as you said, it probably is an aspect of it that is lost in translation, and we're getting something that's maybe, you know, a 7 out of 10 of the harshness getting turned up to 9 or a 10. Mm. But I think the sentiment has been overbearingly negative and undeservedly negative quite a lot when it comes to Ferguson this year. So, look, we're happy to come on air at 7 o'clock, fresh from a new Evan Ferguson goal and fresh with fresh optimism for Irish football once again. So that's the situation there. They have got all 3 points and they are into the top 5, I believe, or into the top 4 now, in fact, in Serie A. So that's the Evan Ferguson situation.
Hey, everybody, it's Off The Ball's Ger Gilroy here. Now, before you dive into this podcast, let me tell you that William Hill have decided racing needed a bit of a shake-up. So they brought in the new Racing Bet Builder. It lets you combine multiple picks from the same race into one personalised bet. Basically, more options, more control, and fewer excuses if your mate's bet beats yours. Pick top 3 finishes, go head-to-head, or call exact positions all in a single bet. It's racing from a new angle, and it's live now with William Hill. Get the app, start building your bet today. It's over 18s only. Gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Cameron Hill, where do you want to begin tonight in the news round?
Oh, like everywhere else, Owen, we better begin with the news today from Manchester United that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has emerged as a leading candidate to take interim charge of the club. Multiple outlets reporting that the Norwegian boss has held talks with the Old Trafford hierarchy today. It would mark his second stint in the United dugout. He came, of course, initially as caretaker boss in 2018 following the departure of Jose Mourinho, was permanently appointed in March 2019 and then left the club in November of 2021. So I would say watch this space on the Solskjaer front going back to United. Darren Fletcher has been appointed after the departure yesterday of Ruben Amorim, and he was speaking to the media for the first time today.
It's an amazing honour, I think, to be able to lead a Manchester United team. I don't even think it's in my wildest dreams that was something that could potentially happen. I think even thinking about playing for the club and stuff like that, but to lead out a team is an amazing honour and something I'm really proud to do, not in the circumstances I expected it to happen. So that obviously is something that doesn't sit quite easy with me, but I've just to think of, I've got a job to do and I've got to lead the team tomorrow and think of the great honour and pride in doing that.
Solskjaer going back seems like it's going to happen until the end of the season, Owen. It feels like a safe enough option given that the previous caretaker stint was clearly good enough for him to get the permanent job. Things have changed quite a lot at Old Trafford since then. The one question I'd have is the difference between Fletcher and Solskjaer that great that you have to switch it up between those two figures? Maybe it is.
It's probably just experience.
Yeah.
The Solskjaer's experience. He's obviously like in an emergency break last. We got Solskjaer back, like Ireland with John O'Shea and Celtic with Martin O'Neill. This is their break last of emergency. This is the man that's kind of get us through this moment.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it makes sense. Like, I'd be interested to see what happens if Manchester United do secure Champions League football and he gives the board something to think about. But even like prior to that, I know
if Manchester United get Champions League football, he'll be manager there.
But Amorim could have got Champions League football.
By default, win the lesser tournament. Or do you mean this season?
This season.
Yeah.
Like he could still have got top five.
And he'd be manager next year. Yeah.
Like, I mean, again, we could relitigate the whole Amorim era, but like for Solskjaer to do that, or for any manager to do that, it's not that much of a leap forward from where Manchester United currently are. I know they've got tough fixtures coming up. Yeah. They just had an easy run, and this is the part where they should probably be comfortably in the top five and then fall back a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard to see them. There's definitely 6 to 7 better teams than Manchester United at the minute in the Premier League, I think.
So Amorim slightly overachieving this season.
I'm already thinking second that fella. Yeah.
If you're going brass tacks, you're replacing a guy who got you to 6th in the Premier League with someone who didn't make the Conference League with Besiktas. Like, you know, that's the calibre of Solskjaer at this point. You know, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a real step down.
Do you reckon?
I think so. It's not a Liam Rosenior kind of appointment.
Yeah. I mean, again, so much has changed in the last number of years. But the first Solskjaer era, there were some real high points. And even in the last 24 hours when people are recounting, you know, their top 10 lists of the post-Alex Ferguson appointments, like, if you're looking for a number one, is Solskjaer 1.0, is that actually the best appointment they've made post-Ferguson?
Hard to know. I think a lot of the noise post-Ferguson is the structures of the club and what's gone on above the manager.
Yeah,
it's the main issue.
They've all been bad, but was Solskjaer not the best of a bad bunch?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Who has been the best post-Ferguson manager?
Ten Hag won FA Cup. Did Solskjaer win anything?
There was a Europa League final in there, wasn't there? That was a whole...
They lost on penalties.
Yeah. So it probably wasn't. Yeah, maybe that is the high water mark. I don't know. I think he's quite low down in the win ratio in terms of the games managed. I think Mourinho's way up there and Ten Hag is up there too. Like, I would probably argue that... Does Jose Mourinho, is he not the top?
Jose would argue the second place finish was a high watermark for that Manchester United era. I think when you look at win percentage, I need to go back through them all, Solskjaer is right in the mix. I think there was like a real sense of belief that they could have launched a title challenge at one point. I'm not saying they did, but there was a point midway through the season that Solskjaer was in charge and where you thought they're actually going to be the ones to potentially challenge here. And when that fades away, and when they fall to whatever it was, 7th, and that defeat to Watford, which precipitates his sacking, when they get hammered 4-1 by Watford, you think, oh, this is a really, really bad situation. But maybe we need to remember the high points that Solskjaer actually reached in the first era. And I'm saying this as somebody, and I remember being quite critical of Solskjaer at the time, but I guess what's happened since COVID is that we've got even greater perspective on Manchester United, and we've got a greater appreciation of how badly run the club is.
Mourinho finished 2nd.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, he's the best. Since Ferguson, then. Surely.
Right, let us know. 087-9180-180. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
We'll move on to Chelsea because they unveiled Liam Rosenior, is what I'm going with. I've heard that from somewhere else. I think it was Seb Hutchinson saying that Leroy Rosenior had told him that's how it's going. So I'm going to go with that. But anyway, he's going to give everything to bring success to Chelsea after being confirmed as the club's new manager. 6-year contract at Stamford Bridge for the 41-year-old. He will watch tomorrow's Premier League match against Fulham from the stands, with under-21s coach Callum McFarlane continuing to take charge on a temporary basis. Nottingham Forest boss Sean Dyche, meanwhile, insists their clash with West Ham tonight isn't a so-called 6-pointer. A victory at the London Stadium would take them 7 points clear at the top or of their opponents, who are currently occupying the Premier League's final relegation place. That kicks off in East London at 8:00.
I just wanted to take a moment there because it's COVID brain and all that. Like, I was thinking when you said that Jose Mourinho finished 2nd, I was thinking, did Solskjaer not finish 2nd? And it was COVID times and everything that happened there doesn't really count and my brain doesn't exist in that time. He did finish 2nd in the 2020-2021 season.
Solskjaer did?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Which is obviously the thing that turned into what felt like a bit of a title race at that point, or a bit of a challenge. Again, speaking with my brain that feels like it doesn't exist at that point, it feels like it never materialised. And sure enough, when you do check it, they finished on 74 points. Manchester City won the title at 86 points, so they were a good bit off top, but still second place, and they were 5 points clear of Liverpool that season and 7 points clear of Chelsea in fourth, with Leicester in fifth. So if you remember all the details of the 2020-2021 season, well done to you, because I certainly do not.
I vaguely remember Ronaldo's son, like when he got to the end of that season, and it was the most polite proving the doubters wrong press conference after they managed to get second. I do remember that, where it was sort of like, ah, you didn't believe me, but it's okay if you didn't believe me, it's absolutely fine. So that probably puts a bow on Solskjaer for the moment. We'll go to Martin O'Neill, because he admits he might not have the energy to stay on as Celtic manager beyond the end of this season. The 73-year-old's back in interim charge at Parkhead 33 days after his last spell. He retakes the job from Wilfred Nancy, who was sacked after a run of 6 defeats in his first 8 games. But just as in his first stint as interim boss this season, O'Neill insists that he's not the long-term solution.
I wonder whether I would have the capacity to go and carry on. And also, I'm 112 next birthday, so I think time is kind of running out for me. Would I be, I'd like to try and do well in it, and I think that, who knows what the board might think, but I would not be, and I'm serious about this, I wouldn't be thinking any longer than the end of the season for me, regardless of what happened.
Is this also your sort of a break glass in case of emergency situation on?
Oh yeah. Yep.
And a good one.
Yeah, well, he done really good in his last little stint a few weeks ago there. His interim time for some was longer than Nancy's permanent time at the club, which was mad. But to show you the turmoil and the place,
it was also good for Brand O'Neill. Like I felt a sense of warmth towards Martin O'Neill for the first time in a while during that first Celtic stint. Feels that him on the sideline, him in the tracksuit, Celtic doing well.
It's nostalgia,
but it's the best version of Martin O'Neill. And like, I think he's tried his best to kind of contain himself when he's been in a studio in the 33 days that Wilfred Nancy was manager, and trying his best to not be critical of the manager who was in situ at that point. But I think he just finds life easier maybe on the touchline, and I think that's the best version of O'Neill. And even in press conferences, he's charming and quite likable in those situations, more so than maybe in other areas. That's just my opinion. But
that's Tony O'Donoghue asking questions.
Yeah. Very different. The Republic of Ireland O'Neill may be different to the Celtic O'Neill. Loads of chat coming in on text around Manchester United, as you'd imagine. Patrick says, or Chris Rodder says, as a Manchester United fan, I'd love a failed loan spell run from Arshesko. Sean of Dublin says, lad, Solskjaer back to United is the most we have no other ideas since another mass in Father Ted. Niche Fan on YouTube says, Ole, Carrick and Fletcher will collaborate as the new coaches. Ole is working for basically nothing. Guaranteed Amorim goes to City after Pep. They will fund his 3-4-3 properly. What do you think happens to Amorim?
I've no idea. I don't know. I do think this damages him. I think ownerships of football clubs want practical managers. I think he live and die in the results at the end of the day, and he didn't seem to have that mindset going into matches because he refused to change how he played, and some of his in-game decisions as well. Good question.
Is his ultimate grievance not entirely justified though, the Semenyo thing? That was what Jamie Jackson was talking about yesterday, that they said that they were going to set aside this month 65 million to get the release clause for Semenyo, but suddenly that money wasn't available for anybody else. Once City, he decided that his preference, and I think he's having a medical in City on Thursday, that, oh no, we don't actually have that. It was for Semenyo or nothing. It was like, I was saying to you outside, it was like when you go to Disneyland and you can only buy Disney dollars. It's like, no, we can't redeem that for any other player, I'm afraid. Sorry about that. Like, is that not a totally justified reason to leave a club if you feel you're not going to give me the backing? You were going to, if it was a specific player, but nobody else.
They probably don't think there's anyone else out there that's worth 65 million. Semenyo 65 million because there's a buyout clause there.
Yeah.
They probably can't get another Semenyo for 65 million.
But my point is, does that not enhance him in the eyes of other clubs later that actually, yeah, it was probably right that you left there. We will give you the backing. I know the kind of lack of compromise and maybe the Pope not telling you if the Pope told you to change.
It's definitely an angle he can use to sell himself in the future. Mm. Absolutely. But I think from a club's point of view, like, value for money is crucial. And like, I want to speak to you later on about the PSR stuff and stuff. But like, I think Semenyo, like, you wouldn't be surprised if Semenyo, if it wasn't the 65 million that he's able to go for, would go for the likes of 90. You know, I think he's really, really that good. And I think it's value for money. It's like, what are you actually getting in return for what you're spending? Now, if they have to go out and spend 65 million on someone else, I don't think you'd get the same type of player as Semenyo. And we're not just going to give you 65 million to do that, because it's probably not worth it.
Yeah, I think that situation. I think last summer they had a Semenyo or Mbeumo situation, and they went the Mbeumo way. But you think that maybe if they were fully backing the manager, they would have gone for somebody else with that cash in January. Paul Hogan's been in touch to say Ole's interim era was the best Manchester United side post Fergie. I know Jose won trophies, but Ole brought United DNA. Pundits can avoid the obvious, but it doesn't matter. United, United, he says. And Patrick on the Chelsea conversation says, giving the new manager a 6-year contract at Chelsea is a joke. 6 months more like the way they go through managers. That's the reality, but will the players have any respect for the man in the dugout if he's not being contracted into the 2030s? I doubt they will. What have you got for us, Cameron?
Well, two more bits on the home front. Owen, Bolton Wanderers have signed Shelburne defender Lewis Temple on a 2-year deal. The 20-year-old made 14 appearances for Shells in 2025, including 3 games in their Conference League campaign, also enjoying spells at Longford Town in Wexford. And Alameen Kazim is heading back to Galway United from St Pat's after a loan spell in 2024. He's going back to Eamon DC Park. He signed an undisclosed deal today.
Now, we will have more on Gaelic games after 8 o'clock, but give us the headline today.
Well, new Mayo manager Andy Moran says Kobe McDonald will be given every opportunity to play for their senior football team this year. The teenager is set to join AFL club St Kilda later this year after his leaving cert, but the son of Mayo great Kieran featured in a challenge game against Meath last month. Moran is keeping the 18-year-old in his panel, and he's also explained why Geelong's Oisin Mullen linked up with the squad this winter. The Mayo boss was speaking to our GAA correspondent Tommy Rooney.
Nobody has asked me one question about Kobe, Tommy Allmore. Like, Kobe's part of it for 2026, so there was no conversation there, really, to be honest. The one with Oisin, yeah, you talked to the leadership group, and he was in training with us anyway, and sure, the boys were expecting him to come more than asking him. But such a great fella, Tommy. Like, he trained with us up to the 29th of December, you know. So he never missed a beat, like, you know. So it was like, when he left, it was like he left us for a second time, you know. But yeah, it was, it's just a great fella. Like, the opportunity for Noah McGrail from Gary Moore to see Oisin Mullen training and to see the way he carries himself around the group and to see the way he looks after Kitman, Liam Ludden, to see the way he does that sort of stuff. And it's no coincidence that these two boys are here from Geelong, because I think this is the way the kind of the cultural aspect of their club runs, you know. And it's I think it's amazing too. Like, you're on about doing podcasts, Tommy, and stuff like that. I think that they're two very interesting fellas to talk to, because I think the way that they carry themselves with Dingle and with Mayo respectively, I think is probably down to the culture they've learned in Australia. And obviously they're great human beings, or they wouldn't have been brought over themselves, but I think they've bought into the culture over there as well. And we were lucky enough to see Oisin performing that over the last maybe 8 weeks with us, you know.
That's fascinating insight from Andy Moore, and just the kind of blend of what we think is professionalism within the GEA and the actual professionalism of the AFL lads. In his case, Oisin Mullen coming back, training with the team for a while, and just what he shows to his teammates in terms of what he's learned down in Australia. It's you kind of have to give credit to Mayo to being open-minded about this, that Mullen's not going to play with them next year, just during his off-season to actually train with the team. And also, got to be relatively open-minded about the fact that Kobe's going to be with them again next year, even though you know that he's going to be flying his wings and going further afield after next year. Actually using what these players have done in terms of going away when they actually come back home, even for a brief period, is not a bad idea as a coach.
Yeah, it's good to get them back in, and taking the ideas of what they're learning over there as well is huge. You see loads of that in sport at the minute. I'm obviously a football man, but I know in the last year, I think Johnny Sexton went over to Brentford and some Shamrock Rovers as well, trying to see what he can learn.
Yeah,
I know the likes of loads of football clubs in England leaned into NFL, and especially dealing into the NBA when VAR came in for corner kicks and stuff, because of how you defend. In a basketball game, you can't use your hands if someone's running at you and stuff. So they leaned into the NBA. I know the FA in England did that. Got some coaches over from the NBA to try to teach the England national team how to defend better from corners without using your hands and stuff. So interesting stuff. It's great. It's obviously you can learn some great things by having a little different outlook on things.
Yeah, definitely seems to be pushing Mayo in the right direction. Anyway, we do have some pre-season action and some other news from Gaelic Games today, Cameron?
Yeah, Galway will be without the services of Matthew Thompson for the early part of the upcoming inter-county season. The Young Footballer of the Year nominee heading to the US, Berkeley in Canada, or California, I believe, as part of his studies, which will rule him out of the National League and Connacht Championship campaigns. Right now, you have two McGrath Cups games down for decision this evening. At the moment, Cork lead Tipperary by 111 to 3 points at Capa White. That's been moved because of the weather, while Clare's clash with Kerry is going ahead at Clare Castle, and Kerry have a 10-point to 4-point lead over Clare in that one. Just on Evan Ferguson watch, he's been given the man of the match award for that Fletcher today.
So. And only played 60 minutes.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. That impact, as Opta might say. And finally, Owen, more coin toss controversy today. So the Ulster hurling pre-season clash between Tipperary and Fermanagh had originally been scheduled for Saturday. That fell foul of the cold weather and was postponed until Monday. Then yesterday, it was further postponed until tonight, down for a 8:15 throw-in at Garvahy. This evening, Tyrone GAA posted this update that the Conor McGurk game below will not be played due to the continuing poor weather conditions, and a coin toss has been conducted to decide who progresses as follows. Tyrone won a coin toss against Fermanagh, so Tyrone now play Donegal in the quarterfinal on Thursday in Convoy.
How would you feel if you were playing a preseason game and it was decided by a coin toss?
Was the game played?
No.
So the game wasn't played at all, just it was the toss of the coin? I don't know. I don't know. But this is pre-season.
It's pre-season.
So what was it? Why did they even bother with the toss of the coin? Is it a tournament?
It's a tournament. It's a pre-season tournament, yeah.
Okay.
I think the Emirates Cup.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Who cares?
Wow.
Yeah, no, who cares? But it doesn't mean anything.
But the crazy thing is, none of these competitions were played last year.
That's it. They matter again. But Longford's O'Byrne Cup defence ended in a coin toss loss at the weekend, for instance. Longford don't win too many trophies.
Yeah, it's a strange one.
No, it's, I mean,
it's just no time, obviously, to get the game in.
Right into the National League at the end of January. You might give us the rugby news, Cameron, because Leinster could line out with an interesting front row at the weekend.
Yeah, so Andrew Porter could switch again to tight head for their game against La Rochelle in the Champions Cup this Saturday. He came in as tight head cover, moving back to the bench when Rabah Slimani pulled up before their game against Connacht in the URC last weekend. So Slimani and Tadhg Furlong are both doubts for the meeting with Ronan O'Gara's two-time champions at the Aviva Stadium this Saturday. And then on the Munster front, you have Munster back rowers John Hodnett and Alex Kendellan ruled out for their trip to Toulon on Sunday. Hodnett has undergone surgery on a thumb injury, while Kendellan is recovering from an ankle issue. Tight head Ollie Yeager has returned to full training this week, but remains a doubt for this weekend's game in France.
All right, Cameron, thank you very much for that. We're going to be speaking to Tariq Panja after the break. He's of the New York Times to talk about the multi-club ownership models in football after the Lemer senior appointment from Strasbourg to Chelsea, both of the Blue Co. football group.
Off the Ball Daily.